Srimad Bhagavatam, and also Prabhupada talks about it in the Krishna book. This day was celebrated. I want to read from the Bhagavatam the very passage describing how Lord Krishna is lifting Govardhan Hill. Before that, what leads up to this is that when, at one point, many years ago, when Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was on this planet and was hiding himself as a cowherd boy in the village of Vrindavan, then one day his father, Nanda Maharaj, he was preparing for a great ceremony and sacrifice to worship Indra. And Krishna, he asked him, "What is this ceremony that you're about to undertake? Is it something that actually is useful, or is it just a tradition? You know, is it just some ritual that you're performing without really knowing why you're doing it? Or actually, do you know why you're performing this ritual?" And then Nanda Maharaj went on to explain that actually we're worshipping Indra, the king of heaven, who is sending rain. And it's actually only due to the benedictions of Indra that we can sustain our lives. Rain is necessary for us to produce food, and we and all our cows and so on, we are depending on food grains which come from rains. And therefore we worship Indra out of gratitude. If we do not worship Indra, if we do not show gratitude, actually then we are not even civilized. It's the duty of all civilized people to show gratitude for the gifts that are being given. And then Lord Krishna, he goes on and he starts arguing with his father gently. He's only at this time 5, 6, 7 years old, something like that, 7 years old as far as I remember. And he objects to his father that actually it's not Indra who is benedicting us, it is our work. Due to when we work nicely, then we get good karma. And good karma is what Indra, he is rewarding. If we didn't have good karma, he couldn't reward us. And when we have good karma, then he must reward us. So actually, what credit is there to Indra? It's actually our work we should worship, he says. And then he goes on to say, actually, what we're really depending on in order to work and live is the cows and the land and the Govardhan Hill. And I think we should worship Govardhan Hill instead. And Krishna, he argues forth and back with his father, and he finally he convinces Nanda Maharaj, yes, let's worship Govardhan. Nanda Maharaj first says, let's do both. But Krishna, he says, no, there's no time for doing both. And we need all the paraphernalia, all the ghee, and all the grains we want to sacrifice. We need everything we can collect for the Govardhan Yajna. There's nothing left for Indra. So finally, Nanda Maharaj, he relents, and he agrees to this, and they perform a wonderful sacrifice, and where all the inhabitants of Vrindavan, they gather, and they make so many offerings to Govardhan Hill, and they take all the cows, and they circumambulate Govardhan Hill. And actually during this sacrifice, Krishna, he assumes a form, a huge form, like Govardhan personal. Everyone can see, actually there's no difference between the Supreme Personality of Godhead and Govardhan. That is kind of a miraculous vision that everyone actually sees. And they understand actually Govardhan is very satisfied, and the brahmanas, they're all very satisfied, and Krishna is satisfied. And they have a very wonderful yakya. This chapter ends by this simply concluding how they're all going back and everyone is happy after this wonderful yakki they performed. But then in the next chapter, this is what I want to read now, where Indra, he actually becomes angry for his sacrifice having been stopped, and he tries to devastate all of Vrindavan with rains, but Krishna, he thwarts him by lifting up Govardhan Hill with his left little finger, and thus he invites all the inhabitants of Vrindavan, see, here is an umbrella, come inside, come under here, here you'll be safe from the rains. And for 7 days and seven nights, Krishna is holding up Govardhan Hill with his left finger, while outside Indra is just pouring down with torrential rains. It's the rains that have been used at a time of devastation. It's not ordinary rain. It's not. It's worse. I mean, it's a rain which just floods everything. But inside, all the inhabitants of Vrindavan, they're just protected by Krishna. And looking at beautiful Krishna, wonderful Krishna, as he is holding up the hill. Then after 7 days, Indra understands that actually who Krishna is, and becomes very embarrassed, and he stops the rains. And then Krishna, he tells everyone, now you can go out, it's safe outside. And after that, then he puts down Govardhan Hill. It is the exact same place that it was before. So I'll read here from, I'm just going to read the translations of the, I'm not going to use Sanskrit because we don't have time for that. But I'm going to read the translations from the Bhagavatam of the chapter 10, like canto 10. And it's chapter 25, which is called Lord Krishna Lifts Govardhan Hill. And here goes, Shukadev Goswami said, my dear King Pariksit, when Indra understood that his sacrifice had been put aside, he became furious with Nanda Maharaj and the other cowherd men who were accepting Krishna as their lord. Angry Indra sent forth a cloud of universal destruction known as Sanvartaka. Imagining himself the supreme controller, he spoke as follows. Indra said, just see how these cowherd men living in the forest have become so greatly intoxicated by their prosperity. They have surrendered to an ordinary human being, Krishna, and thus have offended the gods. You see, of course, Krishna is a very bewildering person to the demigods. If you remember the second chapter in the 10th canto, it's actually called The Demigods Offer Prayers to Lord Krishna in the womb of Devaki. So the demigods, actually they had prayed for Krishna to descend, and Krishna had agreed that he would descend. And when he was in the womb of Devaki, they knew whom he was, and all the demigods were there offering their prayers to him. That means also Indra was also there. And but then what happened is that Krishna took birth or manifested himself and transformed himself into a little human-like child with two arms and was transferred to Vrindavan. And there he was playing like a little boy with all the other cowherd boys. And this feature of Krishna is so bewildering that the demigods, they actually start becoming unsure, is he actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Because he's acting such like a child, he's foolish, he's silly, he's making jokes, he's playing, he's naughty. It's not what you normally associate with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lord of the Universe. And We see here Indra is bewildered by it later on. No, that's before. Brahma was also bewildered, and he was also unsure, actually, who is Krishna. And so we can see, actually, Krishna is such, I mean, Krishna's true Bhagavan, Swayam, that all the other features of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all the Vishnu features, all the Narayan features, all the avatars that enter and descend into this universe, they actually come from Krishna. And it's said that Ete Chamsa Kala Pungsam, Krishna's true Bhagavan Swayam. Ete Chamsa Kala Pungsa means that all the avatars, they are coming from, and they are a part of the, what's called the Purusha, is actually the Garbhadakasaya Vishnu, the Vishnu who is the Lord of the universe. And he expands in all the avatars, they are expansion of him. But then it says that but Krishna, he is actually the original personality of Godhead. He's not an expansion of the Purusha avatar of Garbhadakasaya Vishnu. So Krishna, he is, you know, he's the original personality of Godhead, but he's very mysterious because his feature of opulence and majesty are completely covered, and there's only his very intimate and sweet personality is there, and that is bewildering to anyone. And we see here even Indra becomes bewildered, and Brahma was bewildered. So this is Indra. We see that he said here that, again, he said they have surrendered to an ordinary human being, Krishna, and thus they have offended the gods. They are taking shelter of Krishna is just like the foolish attempt of men who abandon transcendental knowledge of the self and instead try to cross over the great ocean of material existence in the false boats of fruitive ritual sacrifices. These coward men have acted inimically toward me by taking shelter of this ordinary human being, Krishna, who thinks himself very wise, but who is simply a foolish, arrogant, over-talkative child. Here the acharyas, they take all the words and they analyze them and show that even though it appears that Indra is insulting Krishna, but the goddess of learning, Sarasvati, she is using the tongue of Indra and kind of twisting Indra's tongue. So the words he speaks has dual meanings. Indra intends them to be defamations of Krishna, but actually if you analyze them, and actually they turn out, he's glorifying Krishna through the tongue of Indra. Because you see that in many places, acharyas, they do like this. So, the prosperity of these people has made them mad with pride, and their arrogance is backed up by Krishna. Now go and remove their pride and bring their animals to destruction. I will follow you to Raja, riding on my elephant Airavata, and taking with me the swift and powerful wind gods to decimate the cowherd village of Nanda Maharaj. Sukadeva Goswami said, on Indra's order, the clouds of universal destruction, released untimely from their bonds, went to the cowherd pastures of Nanda Maharaj. There they began to torment the inhabitants by powerfully pouring down torrents of rain upon them. Propelled by the fearsome wind gods, the clouds blazed with lightning bolts and roared with thunder as they hurled down hailstones. All as the clouds released torrents of rain as thick of massive columns, the earth was submerged in the flood, and high ground could no longer be distinguished from low. The cows and other animals, shivering from the excessive rain and wind, and the cowherd men and ladies, pained by the cold, all approached Lord Govinda for shelter. Trembling from the distress brought about by the severe rainfall and trying to cover their heads and calves with their own bodies, the cows approached the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Like, how had men and women addressed the Lord? Krishna, Krishna, O most fortunate one, please deliver the cows from the wrath of Indra. O Lord, you are so affectionate to your devotees. Please save us also. Seeing the inhabitants of his Gokul rendered practically unconscious by the onslaught of hail and blasting wind, the Supreme Lord Hari understood that this was a work of angry Indra. Sri Krishna said to himself, because we have stopped his sacrifice, Indra has caused this unusually fierce, unseasonable rain, together with terrible winds and hail. By my mystic power, I will completely counteract this disturbance caused by Indra. Demigods like Indra are proud of their opulence, and out of foolishness, they falsely consider themselves the Lord of the universe. I will now destroy such ignorance. Since the demigods are endowed with a mode of goodness, the false pride of considering oneself the Lord should certainly not affect them. When I break the false prestige of those bereft of goodness, my purpose is to bring them relief. I must therefore protect the cowherd community by my transcendental potency, for I am their shelter, I am their master, and indeed they are my own family. After all, I have taken a vow to protect my devotees. Having said this, Lord Krishna, who is Vishnu himself, picked up Govardhan Hill with one hand and held it aloft just as easily as a child holds up a mushroom. Actually here, it's not mentioned here, but Prabhupada mentions it's in the Nectar of Devotion, that at this point, Krishna is at one point, he's a little angry with Indra. And then he says, I'm going to destroy Indra and his heavenly kingdom. But then he thinks about, anyway, so is Indra and his heavenly kingdom is so insignificant. Indra is like an ant. There's no reason to destroy him. So I'll just crush his pride by, with my little finger, I'll lift up Govardhan Hill. Prabhupada explains it. These thoughts go on in the mind of Krishna. And Krishna is again bewildering because, you know, he's all knowing and all powerful. Still, he is deliberating, should I do this, should I do that? And sometimes he gets, I'll do this. And they said, no, it's actually better to do something else. And because he's a person, persons are like that. The persons think and deliberate and like that. So does Krishna. So, not Krishna, he has lifted up Govardhan Hill. The Lord then addressed the cowherd community. O mother, O father, O residents of Raja, if you wish, you may now come under this hill with your cows. You should have no fear that this mountain will fall from my hand. And don't be afraid of the wind and rain, for your deliverance from these afflictions has already been arranged. Their minds are pacified by Lord Krishna. They all entered beneath the hill, where they found ample room for themselves and all their cows, wagons, servants and priests, and for all other members of the community as well. Lord Krishna, forgetting hunger and thirst, and putting aside all considerations of personal pleasure, stood there holding up the hill for 7 days as the people of Raja gazed upon him. When Indra observed this exhibition of Lord Krishna's mystic power, he became most astonished. Pulled down from his platform of false pride and his intentions thwarted, he ordered his clouds to desist. Seeing that the fierce wind and rain had now ceased, the sky had become clear of rain clouds and the sun had risen. Lord Krishna, the lifter of Govardhan Hill, spoke to the cowherd community as follows. Lord Krishna said, my dear cowherd men, please go out with your wives, children and possessions. Give up your fear. The wind and rain have stopped and the river's high waters have subsided. After collecting their respective cows and loading their paraphernalia into their wagons, the cowherd men went out. The women, children and elderly persons gradually followed them. While all living creatures looked on, the Supreme Personality of Godhead put down the hill in its original place, just as it had stood before. All the residents of Vrindavan were overwhelmed with ecstatic love, and they came forward and greeted Sri Krishna according to their individual relationships with him, some embracing him, others bowing down to him, and so forth. The cowherd women presented water mixed with yogurt and unbroken barley corns as a token of honor, and they showered auspicious benedictions upon him. Mother Yashoda, Mother Rohini, Nanda Maharaj and Balaram, the greatest of the strong, all embraced Krishna. Overwhelmed with affection, they offered him their blessings. In the heavens, O King, all the demigods, including the Siddhas, Satyas, Gandharvas, and Charanas, sang the praises of Lord Krishna and showered down flowers in great satisfaction. My dear Pariksit, the demigods in heaven resoundingly played their conch shells and kettle drums, and the best of the Gandharvas, led by Tumburo, began to sing. Surrounded by his loving cowherd boyfriends and Lord Balaram, Krishna then went off to the place where he had been tending his cows. The cowherd girls returned to their homes, singing joyfully about the lifting of Govardhan Hill and other glorious deeds performed by Lord Krishna, who had so deeply touched their hearts. And this is the end of this chapter. And next chapters are connected. I'm not going to read them, but the next chapter is called Wonderful Krishna, and it's the cowherd men. It's Nanda Maharaj, mainly who's speaking to the cowherd men and talking about all the opulences of Krishna, the wonders of Krishna that he has, well, as he has seen, but especially also as he has heard from Garga Muni. And you might wonder, why is this? I mean, then the next chapter after that, that's Indra who's offering prayers to Lord Krishna. Why is this chapter here called Wonderful Krishna suddenly inserted, in between these two other chapters, which are directly the Govardhan Lila? And as far as I can tell, the reason is that these 7 days and seven nights were an unprecedented close intimacy that all the residents of Vrindavan had with Lord Krishna. I mean, who? There's no one, Balaram except maybe, and not even him, who are present with Krishna day and night. You know, at nighttime, he's either with his mother and father, and sometimes he sneaks into the forest with the girls from Vrindavan. In the daytime, he's out herding with the cowherd boys. So it means at night, the cowherd boys end up with Krishna. In the daytime, his parents and the cowherd girls and cowherd, they're not with Krishna. No one is with him, you know, 24 hours a day. But during these 7 days and seven nights, everyone was with Krishna, uninterrupted for 7 days and seven nights. So actually they came so close to Krishna, they were so filled with the impression of Krishna's form and beauty and everything about Krishna that there was nothing, they could only talk about Krishna. They were so amazed by Krishna. I mean, just the fact that he was lifting a hill, you know, that's pretty amazing. So that's something to talk about. But then also, you know, all the other things. Actually, the lift thing. The other features of Krishna was that while he was lifting the Govardhan Hill, he had all kinds of exchanges with all the different inhabitants of Vrindavan. He was exchanging glancing and laughing and talking and so many. That's of course also amazing. It wasn't like he was exerting himself. It said that Prabhupada gives the analogy that you have Atlas, who is a Greek god, as far as I know, and there's a kind of a classical, I don't know if it's a painting or a statue, where Atlas is holding up the earth globe. And he seems to be, you know, it's very hard work. He's almost shaking. He's tired from holding up this heavy globe. And Prabhupada points out, this idea should not be entertained in connection with Krishna. Krishna is not exerting himself when he's maintaining this universe, holding up the planets, or holding up a small mountain like Govardhan Hill. It was play for him. And during play, he was doing so many other things. And so the coward men, they were filled with Krishna, that they couldn't do anything but just talk about Krishna after this. Of course, Vrindavan is just different degrees of being filled with Krishna and talking about him. But after the Govardhan Lila, everyone was degree they were filled with Krishna and Krishna's impression had never been reached to such a level before. So there, it's just you can say it's my speculation, why this chapter is inserted in here. And then after that comes Indra's prayers, which also are very, very important. And actually, often the last chapter after Leela, you have a Leela with lots of things happening, and then they're concluded with a prayer by some great devotee generally. And these prayers are also often the essential part of the whole Leela, because that's where all the instruction, all what can be learned from this particular Leela, that's been explained in these prayers. So that's also true for this Leela. But again, the Govardhan Leela has so many aspects and is practically inexhaustible to discuss the Govardhan pastime at all levels. And you see here that the residents of Vrindavan, what they're discussing, they're not so much amazed. Of course, they are amazed by Krishna, that is he really an ordinary cowherd boy? And Gaga Muni, Mananda Maharaj relates what Gaga Muni has told him, and actually he's not. He is probably Narayan. He's maybe a demigod, but he's probably Narayan. Mananda Maharaj will agree to that. And so that's the coward men. They're probably astonished by a hill being lifted, but that's not really what they're astonished by. They're astonished by Krishna, the person. But on the other hand, we should also be astonished that a hill is being lifted. That's also one approach to the Govardhan Hill. We might say that's for the first step in God realization. That's also there in the Govardhan Hill. You have the great skeptics. They will write off this that a little boy lifts a hill. This is mere mythology. They would just say this is just too incredible. They probably wouldn't say it's incredible. It's just stupid. It's a little silly. But devotees do not think like that. Devotees actually accept that a hill was lifted at more than 5,000 years ago. Vyasadev, who wrote the Bhagavatam, wrote the whole Vedic literature, had no business placing imaginary stories in the Vedas. If he did this, he specifically, there are allegories like that in the Vedas also. Then Vyasa says, this is an allegorical story, but he had no business presenting allegorical stories or myths as if they were historical facts. Vyasadeva was the most learned person practically ever, and such a scholar and such a scientist, and he simply presented facts. And he had no desire to anything that was simply to present facts. So that's one point. And the next point is that why is it so wonderful? It's not really particularly wonderful that a hill is lifted by a little boy, if that boy is the Supreme Lord himself. I mean, why is that particularly wonderful? There are planets which are floating in space, which have thousands of mountains, millions of mountains, which are just as, or even much bigger than Govardhan Hill. If these planets can be floated in space, what's a problem for the same person who's behind here to lift a small hill? I mean, it shouldn't be such an astonishing thing, actually. When you realize there is a person behind, then this person has just incredible power. And for one moment look at this Earth and the Sun, and how they actually are—they're tied together, and they're circulating around each other. According to the Vedas, the Sun circles around the Earth, and if whatever way it's ultimately, that doesn't really matter. But they are—you know—they're separated by the space from between the Sun and the Earth is so vast. It's just empty, seemingly empty space, but they are tied together as tightly, like you have, for instance, in a car, two wheels tied by an axle, this a piece of iron, basically. And they don't move because they're bolted together with a solid iron rod. So the Earth and the Sun, in which there's only empty, seemingly empty space, they also tied together like that. That's amazing, actually. We take it for granted, gravity. We hold one thing, we drop it, it falls to the ground. It's just ordinary, nothing to be amazed about. But it's amazing. It's really mystical. How is it possible? So you just look around in the universe and you look around in nature. There are wonders everywhere. Everything is actually mystical. So there's nothing, in one sense, more amazing and mystical about a mountain being lifted by a little boy than whatever else is going on in the universe. Everything is just amazing. So that shouldn't be a cause for a particular doubt that God, he did that when he was a small child. We should expect it. Religious people, because also you'll have religious people who will doubt when you hear that. You have people of other religions who would definitely accept, they will put their hands to the heart and say, yes, I believe in God, that he's almighty, we call the Almighty Father. And then we present with him, God was here, and he lifted a hill. But then someone will say, no, that cannot be true. Why can it not be true? God is almighty, but he cannot come here. Someone would say, but if he is almighty, he can come here, and he can be a small boy. Who would you say he cannot? And if he comes, he's also almighty, he can lift a hill. You cannot say he cannot. If you say he's almighty, he can do anything. So why not that? And then someone would say he wouldn't do that, but why wouldn't he do it? I mean, that's again going beyond... one would be amazed if he didn't do that. If God came, when God comes, and he comes, but he doesn't do things which are beyond the ordinary, what kind of descent of God is that? We should expect extraordinary things to happen when God comes. So why, how can, if someone who accepts existence of God, why shouldn't he be willing to accept that God comes and he lifts a hill? There should be no reason not to accept that God does exist. It's a fact that we, how many atheists are here? Yeah, I thought so. I had suspicion. So everyone here accepts God exists, knows that God exists. So then that from that point there should be no problem except that Krishna lifted gold on hill. I mean, why? So that we all agree. I mean, it's reasonable. It's rational. Just like, you know, of course we didn't see it. We have this skeptical minds. We say we want to see things, but that's again absurd. We do not see anything. I think Prabhupada said once, you know, what have you seen? You've seen your mother's womb, basically. That's you've seen your mother. That's what you've seen. And we hear so many things. We just believe. We have heard about Napoleon. We've heard about Alexander the Great. None of us have seen them. We believe them. We believe these persons, they were existing, and why shouldn't we believe it? You know, it's just knowledge is being handed over by tradition, you know, historical narrations. So this is one of them. And what's the problem? Otherwise, we are filtering the knowledge simply by our preconceptions. That means actually we're not really getting knowledge, we're just reinforcing our own preconceptions. And there's just because we have only heard about it is not an argument for not accepting that it is true. I mean, then we can be skeptical about anything. These arguments will go forth and back. Prabhupada would say ultimately everyone can decide what they believe. We believe Krishna did it. I mean, we have no reason to not accept that Krishna he lifted the Govardhan hill, and showed his Godhead, his all might. But much more than that. That's also part of it. When Krishna he performs an action, he doesn't only accomplish one goal or one purpose. By one action, he accomplishes many, many things at the same time. So he demonstrates, actually he is a supreme lord. He crushed the pride of Indra. He showed how once you not worship demigods, there's no use to worship demigods. He gave all the inhabitants of Vrindavan a chance to be... Hare Krishna. Rakshasa or ghost, but that's not possible here in the temple. It's a transcendental place. Yeah, then it must be. Was it Indra? Anyway, do you have some questions or comments? You first. No, will you?
Is it that when Krishna lifted Govardhan hill, it was much bigger, I think, than we see now?
Yeah, it was a bigger mountain. There's a whole story about, or history, about Govardhan hill. Actually, it's many years ago since I've heard it. You probably know it better than I do. But there was... Govardhan doesn't really originally wasn't in Vrindavan. Wasn't in Himalayas.
No,
Vindhya.
In
Vindhya Mountains. And there was one. Who was a rishi?
Pulastya.
Okay. Who wanted to bring Govardhan hill to his ashram?
Benares.
To Benares. Okay, and then he Govardhan agreed, or some, but on the condition that you cannot put me down. If you put me down, wherever you put me down, I'll just stay there. You cannot lift from there. And then when Pulastya was carrying Govardhan, then when he was over the area, Mathura and Vrindavan, suddenly, you know, nature exerted such a strong influence on him, he had to go and urinate, wasn't it?
Yes.
And so it was completely critical. So he had to put down Govardhan and go and do, you know, attend to his nature. But then he came back and wanted to lift Govardhan again, and he couldn't. And at that point, then Pulasti became angry and cursed Govardhan, because he don't want to go with me further than this, that I curse you that you will gradually sink down into the ground, one mustard seed every year,
day.
Every day. That's pretty much.
Yeah. It was a big mountain.
60
miles high.
16 miles high. That was a very big mountain. Bigger than Everest. That's pretty big. Our neighbor, he's been on top of Everest, but anyway. No. And you see, it was pretty big in itself, he said. But this is twice the size. It's Leela. It's part of the Leela, simply. I mean, you see, also, it's Govardhan is there in Goloka Vrindavan, in the spiritual world. They're all there. And but then when they come to this world, they manifest in different ways. It's like for example, it's described that also Sudarshan, you know, is Krishna's eternal weapon. But here in this world, who gave Sudarshan to him as a gift? Agni?
Fire or sun.
Yeah. And so all these personalities of the spiritual world, they manifest here in different ways. So seemingly they are, you know, they take birth from some material mother and father, or somehow or other they have a material history. But it's just Leela. And it's part of the Leela is that Govardhan gradually disappears. It's part of the Leela.